pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country 2 minutes at a time for the biggest stories of the day where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now. We're going around the country 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people, covering the stories where they're happening. You know what we call it, people? We call it the 2 minute drill. It's brought to you by our friends at Joslyn's Jewelry. Gary Joslyn and his staff, the best. You got Mother's Day right around the corner. You want to let mom know she's a special, that she's important. Then you go to Joslyn's Jewelry. The best diamonds in the world are at Joslyn's. Cut and clarity. They know that's what's important. Scintillating diamonds, plus birthstones, all kinds of great creative jewelry options, plus the most knowledgeable staff you're going to find anywhere. Friendliest staff as well. More than 40 years. You know they're doing a lot of things right when they've been in business. For more than 40 years. 95th and Metcalf, just about a mile north of 435. It is worth the drive if you're coming from anywhere in the metro, right there at 95th and Antioch. Joslyn's Jewelry, online at joslynsjewelry.com. See them in person right there at 95th and Antioch. All right, let's get things started. In Detroit, Michigan, the Alliance hosted the draft. Will Birchfield, 97.1, The Ticket, and Fox 2 TV is there in Detroit. Will, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. What's the verdict on having the draft in Detroit? Was it a hit? Was it a success? Was everybody happy?
It was a smashing success. And the verdict is, bring it back. You know, we'll just keep it. We'll just run it back next year. I thought it was a great tribute to the city of Detroit, to the rebirth of the Lions. I thought that Detroit proved the world what we all know here locally, which is that this is one of the best football towns, one of the best sports towns, not just in this country, but on planet Earth. I mean, to have 700,000-plus fans come out and probably a million-plus downtown over the course of 3 days speaks to the passion for football, for the Lions locally, and certainly that's been stoked by the team's success recently. But it was just really satisfying for the world to see what we know to be true. And I thought it was just such a uniquely Detroit experience. I mean, from the very first night, you had Eminem take the stage in Cadillac Square with Barry Sanders and Calvin Johnson. You had Barry Sanders at one point serving Bud Lights at D-Dubs downtown. You had Amon-Ra St. Brown serving pizza slices from a Little Caesars pizza truck. Everything about it screamed, felt, smelled like, tasted like Detroit. And I have no doubt that in time, the draft will be back here for certain.
What's the reaction? One of the things we've heard here is we had our own little stadium vote that failed here. And one of the conversations was, well, we got the draft because we're not getting the Super Bowl. Detroit has held, what, I think a couple of Super Bowls, if I'm not mistaken. Was that one of the conversations that, you know, people are aware of, that that's kind of the NFL's thing? Here, you can have this because we're not giving you that.
Yeah, perhaps. And usually franchises that build new stadiums are rewarded with hosting the Super Bowl. And that was the case certainly back in 2006 when they hosted that game between the Seahawks and the Steelers. Ford Field had just been completed a couple years prior. I also think that if you put Roger Goodell on a lie detector, he would say they thought the Lions would be picking probably in the top three this weekend. And so what a great way to celebrate that pick in the city where we could watch the next franchise quarterback or the next Aiden Hutchinson be drafted. And, you know, you fast forward 2 years, and here they are picking in the back of the first round for the first time in what feels like forever. So, nonetheless, it was just a tremendous experience. And, of course, the Lions fans downtown got the gratification of seeing the Lions trade up in the first round.
Yeah, all right. Let's talk a little bit about what they did get done. A couple of defensive backs, Terry and Arnold. They take Ennis Rakestraw from Mizzou. Was that the top order of business, is improving that pass defense?
Yeah, the agency and the Lions' agenda during the draft, they're always going to take the best player available to them. And I think we saw how true that was, because you rarely see teams double up at the same spot in the first two picks. Certainly at cornerback, that's a rarity, and they didn't hesitate to do so. And while cornerback might not seem like a pressing need right now with Carlton Davis here and Amik Robertson signed and others back, it was and has been a long-term need for the Lions for the better part of 4 years, really since they moved on from Darius Slay, the prior regime. And so with Rakerstraw and Arnold in the fold now, you've got potentially two number one corners under contract for at least the next 4 seasons. So Lions and D coordinator Aaron Glenn have to feel pretty good about that.
Amon-Ra St. Brown and Penei Sewell signed big money extensions to keep them happy. Jared Goff in the final year of his deal. A lot of people chanting Jared Goff at that draft. I assume we feel like this will get done, and how big will the deal be?
Yeah, a lot of people, including Amon-Ra St. Brown, who led the Jared Goff chant on stage on Thursday night, and it rang throughout the city as it did during the playoff run. I think that Jared Goff is pushing for a number per year that begins with 5, and the Lions are probably more comfortable with something closer to 45 per year. But that's the going market rate now for a quarterback who statistically has been one of three quarterbacks in football for the past 2 seasons, guys. Over the past 2 seasons, second in the NFL in completions and yards, only to Mahomes, third in touchdowns to Mahomes and Allen, and fourth in wins to Mahomes, Allen, and Hurts, fifth in passer rating. So if you want to extend a guy who's putting up those numbers, that whole age where the cap is spiking historically, it's going to likely cost you about $50 million a year, and it may be slightly less, maybe 48, 49, but certainly north of 45 for Jared's next deal.
Will Birchfield in Detroit, Michigan. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great week, my friend.
You guys too. Appreciate that.
It's New York, Philly.
Eitan Shander, Fox 29, and the Philly Voice in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania is next. Eitan, how are you, sir?
I've been better from a work standpoint, seeing what's happening here with the Philadelphia 76ers. So life is great, so I hope it's the same for you.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been fun here with the draft. How about the Sixers? They had a tough loss in Game 2. Bounce back, win Game 3. People get excited. 50 out of Joel Embiid, and then they drop Game 4 to go down 3-1 to the Knicks. And Joel Embiid, after having really kind of no-showed all the fourth quarters, comes out and says he doesn't like how many Knicks fans were there at the games in Philly. Where do we sit on this series, and where do we sit with the fans and Joel Embiid?
Yeah, I think this is just a total epic failure right now, mass proportions, when you look at the inability to really address anything before this season, trade deadline. Joel Embiid once again fulfills the narrative of just not being healthy or 100% come the playoffs. Tobias Harris vanishes. Nick Nurse getting outcoached. And I think to cap it all, Saran, is what you just mentioned, where all right, Joel Embiid just jumps out, and he's now the best player on the floor, drops 50, ailing on one knee with Bell's palsy. And then the very next game, Jalen Brunson says, hold my keg, and drops the franchise record in Philadelphia to basically seal this series. That's the microcosm of everything. And there's nothing right now, Soren, that the Philadelphia 76ers are doing better than the New York Knicks.
Do you think that they can still win this series? Teams that come back from 3-1 down, can the Sixer team do it?
Yeah, look, they have the talent, which I think is the most infuriating thing in all of this. Brunson dropped 47, and Tobias Harris is 35 total points through 4 games. You can't keep relying on Kelly Oubre and Cameron Payne and anybody up, Buddy Hield, who's also on a milk crate. Like, you can't keep relying on guys who are not there to take over or be a secondary option if either Embiid or Maxey struggle. So everything that's been going on right now, it's going to be tough. And here's why, real quick. Role players play better at home. Well, the Knicks got better role play on the road than the Sixers have, and that's where I think ultimately it's going to be really tough. But look, if Philly wins Game 5, there's momentum, and I think if they win Game 5, it goes to 7.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what the Philadelphia Eagles did, grabbing Quinion Mitchell and Cooper DeJean. They go corner with the top two picks. We know this was a big need for them. Does this make everybody in Philly happy?
Absolutely. I think, again, you look at what Howie Roseman has been able to do in the offseason, if it's get ahead of contracts with Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown, or simply navigate the draft board using currency and understanding how to move up or really take advantage of moving back. But there was so much panic thanks to the Falcons and the trickle-down effect of people rushing up to grab offensive players to rent that Quinyon Mitchell fell in his hands. And I guarantee you this, that's the only way that Howie Roseman, outside of trading and leveraging too much to move up from 22, that's the only way that they had it on their board that a guy like Mitchell was going to fall in their lap. And then again, with DeGene, like that, this is another great pick. You've got a tall kid who can move and cover both of these guys. Mitchell, no penalties in college. This was fantastic. I tell you, beyond even Jeremiah Trotter, who Jr., whose dad is just an amazing dude, an all-time legend here in the Axeman, I'm excited for this Johnny Wilson kid. 6'7", out of Florida State. They take him in the sixth round. I'm watching some tape. He's moving out there like a watch. It reminds me of Kevin Garnett when everybody saw him out of Farragut. Like, a guy that big shouldn't be able to take the ball up the floor like that. I'm excited about this draft, man.
Yeah, and for good reason. Are you excited about the contract given to A.J. Brown on the heels of paying Devontae Smith? Some people thought, okay, they're paying Smith because they're going to walk on Brown. Instead, they paid both of them, and this is while they're already in the midst of some cap issues. Good move, bad move? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. Just look at the timing, right? Devontae Smith gets paid, and the next thing you know, you see a couple of guys, see contracts come out, and clearly the Eagles got ahead of that market. And there's money, at least, for A.J. Brown. Now, you know how these deals work. It's the NFL. You can get out of stuff. You can maneuver stuff down the line. But I think right now this solidifies the group. And you need to be able to throw the football and take some risks with this offense. And look, the 1-2 tandem of Brown and Smith, as long as these guys are healthy, Seren, this should be one of the top duos in the league.
Yeah, it should be. It's a lot of money to tie up in one position. And I heard a stat today that of the 10 most productive wide receivers, 5 of them were on rookie deals. You know, like that, like it's a young man's position now. I don't know that it's as young man as corner is, but it is somewhat of a young man's position. We'll see if it pans out in the long run, if it plays out, and if they can make that cap work, because it's make or break for the head coach, right?
Well, that's the thing. And look, to be fair, they could have Walter Payton come back or, you know, somebody along those lines, and they still wouldn't run the football. So it's a matter of having as many options to throw to as possible. But that's another big factor on the weight of Nick Sirianni. Look, Nick Sirianni should have been fired at the end of last year watching that total collapse of a football team, especially with so many guys carrying over into this year. But instead, they propped him up with Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio, and they're hoping that those coordinators, much like we saw with Steichen and Gannon, can take over and not basically prevent Sirianni from undoing the team on his own. But yes, if things don't go well this year, this is it for him.
Eitan Chander in Philly, you're the man. We appreciate it, my friend. Have yourself a great week.
You too, my brother. Thanks, Seren.
When I get my car back activated, I'm back to Vegas.
Adam Hill, Las Vegas Review Journal and ESPN Las Vegas in, of course, Las Vegas, Nevada. Adam, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Brock Bowers we'll get to in a minute. What about a quarterback? Was there any thought, was there any idea about maybe moving up to go after one of the top quarterbacks?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I don't think there was any secret that they wanted to move up, but they wanted to move way up. They wanted Jaden Daniels. And I think, you know, a lot of speculation of whether they would have taken Michael Penix, whether they would have moved up a couple spots for Michael Penix. I think it was considered and discussed, but this was basically from the beginning a Jaden Daniels or bust operation in terms of a quarterback search, and they weren't going to be able to get there. I think that they made a pretty significant offer. The Commanders were pretty tied to taking him, and it just wasn't going to happen. They had to move a long way up, and it's why some of the wins at the end of last season when all the fans here were celebrating and so excited about winning a couple meaningless games. And I said, well, let's see what you feel on draft night. And now a lot of them were like, oh, it's so hard to move up. That sucks. Like, yeah. Tyson lost a couple games at the end of the year would have been a little helpful in your pursuit of a quarterback.
All right, what do we think of what they did get done? Let's start, first of all, with Brock Bowers at 13 after taking a tight end last year in the second round. What's the reaction?
Well, I mean, I think it's been general from those that follow the team closely, including myself, have said unbelievable player, fantastic talent, questionable pick. And I think all those things are possible. I mean, I think he's a tremendous talent. I think that we've seen it. We've seen the production. We've seen what he's able to do. They move him all over the field at Georgia, and I think they're going to do similar things here in Vegas with him, and I think he's going to be a really good player. But, you know, you go back to who's throwing him the ball, that's a question. And also, you know how hard it is for tight ends to adjust to the NFL level. We've seen it with some of the most recent, you know, really high-end first-round picks that were tight ends. Just hasn't happened quickly because it is a tough position to learn. So I think he's going to be a really good player, but you also invested a very premium pick in a tight end last year in Michael Mayer. So now you got two of those, you know, really highly touted guys who are very productive in college. We'll see what they do at the NFL level. And you know, we'll see if they're able to make that work together. But I think he's a great player. I just don't know if it's the right pick to make, especially because we know that, you know, not taking value positions in the first round tends to not work out very well for teams.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. Is the feeling that the Raiders got better in this draft? Is the feeling that they caught up to anybody in the AFC West?
I don't think so. I mean, the fans certainly disagree. I think they did a good job in the draft. I think it was a really solid draft. I think once you don't get the quarterback that you really, really want, you try to find players that are talented and also just build in the trenches. And that's what they did. I think they found guys that are going to be, you know, quality starters, decent players. I think they found some good depth pieces as well. And they also found some players that have, you know, traits, right? You find a cornerback who is the most athletic corner in the draft. He might have a little work to do in terms of learning the position at the NFL level, but let's see if he's able to turn those traits into something. I think they did a good job. What I said is they hit a bunch of singles in the draft, maybe a couple turn into some doubles, triples, maybe even a home run, but they just did solid work on the draft, but I don't think they dramatically improved the team or anything like that. And I think there's fans around here that believe that they were an A++ draft. I don't think that's the case. I mean, it's a good draft, a good solid draft, and that's some kind of different from this organization. So something solid to build on, and when you do find a quarterback, you'll have a pretty good team roster to plug him into.
Jaden Hicks, safety from Washington State, was a fourth-round pick of the Chiefs. He's a Vegas kid. You know the family a little bit. You think the Chiefs got a good one?
Yeah, I think he's a really good player. And more importantly for me, I mean, I think a really, really good kid. I think Kansas City's going to love him. I think he's going to be able to develop a little bit. It looks like, kind of looking at the roster, I don't know if you agree, I think maybe next year, if he's able to develop, he might be able to step into a spot that's needed. The Chiefs, you know, continue to do what they do around Patrick Mahomes and just find guys through the draft to fill in and take these roles at good value. But yeah, really good kid, really good player. He's a kid who went away from Bishop Gorman here in Vegas to develop. He wanted to develop not only as a football player, but as a person, and he thought he could do that by going away to a small town in college up at Washington State. And I think he went from being just a very good kid to a really fine young man, and really improved as a player as well. He's a guy that he loves playing in the box from safety. He loves coming up, helping support the run, and he also was a cornerback for one of the best high school programs in the country, so he can also cover. He's very capable of stepping out and then backing up in pass coverage as well. So, good player, good kid. I think you're going to like him. And just to go back 1 second about the quarterback, Jackson Powers-Johnson, the new guard for the Raiders, said, hey, if they need to throw the ball, I'll throw the ball. So, maybe they did find a quarterback.
Okay, yeah, that's good to know. Tell me, the Knights are up in their series, but being accused of skirting the salary cap. How do you do that? How does that work? And is this going to end up being a big story?
Well, it's been a story every year. So what it is, for people that don't follow the NHL closely, and hopefully maybe you guys find out soon about the NHL in Kansas City, that'd be nice to get a team there. But they have, every year have had very significant players on long-term IR during the season, which means those guys don't count against the cap, which means you can then go and acquire players at the deadline and really have a roster as a full that's far over the cap. And then once the playoffs start, there is no cap. So then you reactivate those guys from long-term IR, and they can play. And so, look, it's completely following the rules. Is it in the spirit of the rules? I don't know. But Tampa Bay took full advantage of that during their run as championship winners, and Vegas has made no secret of doing that. Really, the key is your owner willing to spend that much money and go that far over the cap? And in Vegas, yeah, Bill Foley has been committed to that. And I get why fans around the league are upset about it and angry about it, but if your owner would do the same thing, yeah, you're perfectly allowed to do it. So, you know, it might change. The rule might change at some point. But while we're at where we are with the rules, there's nothing against it.
Yeah, until you change the rules, the job of every general manager and organization is to figure out the best way to build the best team within the rules. So, yeah, stop crying.
Exactly.
Real quick, and you can just say no if the answer is just no. Anything new about the A's in the stadium there?
Is that a good answer?
Yep, that's perfect. That'll work. Okay. I'll take it. Adam Hill in Las Vegas. Great stuff as always, buddy. Appreciate it, my friend.
Sounds good. Thanks, man.
Talk to Jake Query, 107.5 The Fan in Indianapolis, Indiana. Jake, how are you, sir?
I am well, thank you. Yourself?
Very good. Listen, I love me some Tyrese Halliburton. Love the Pascal Siakam move. Love the youth of this team. And now they're on the brink of winning a playoff series against the Milwaukee Bucks, albeit, I don't know, am I wrong in looking at how difficult it's been for them to win some of these games? I mean, I know they're up 3-1, and you don't apologize about a win, but no Giannis and then no Dame Lillard, and they're still kind of in these dogfights. What are we thinking about how well Indiana's playing right now?
Yeah, that's the thing. Is the Pacers' bugaboo all year, quite frankly, has been the fact that they have a tendency to go down to their level of competition. You know, they all season long were really good against really good teams, including Milwaukee, but when all of a sudden maybe they feel like they can scale it back a little bit, that's been the thing that they've had a tendency to do. Now, I don't think you could say that in this series. I mean, they got blown out in game one, they've come back and responded, but Milwaukee is clearly limping. But the hardest thing to do is to land a knockout blow. I think they know they've got to go for the jugular here in game five, try to end the series and move on, presumably against what looks like it's going to be New York, but still one game at a time. And, you know, Milwaukee has done a nice job, quite frankly. I mean, I thought Lopez and Middleton both, you know, played well for them in game four, but the Pacers have found good balance. And I think what you see with this team is that once they acquired Siakam, their offense did slow down a little bit as they tried to figure out his operating areas and tendencies. Now that they've become more familiar with where Siakam wants the ball, they've been able to get their offense back into a good ball movement in the half court set. So their defense, which was abysmal at the beginning of the year, is now at the very least competent and at times very good, and it's worked out well for them. I think the ceiling would be the Eastern Conference Finals, but I think if they go in against New York, they've got a shot in that series as well. But you've got to knock out a team that has a championship pedigree in Milwaukee, and it's going to be a tough one for them to get that last one. But the good news, of course, is if it comes back here for a game six, it would be at home.
Yeah, they're going to get it. I think it's just a matter of time. What's the reaction? We'll talk about Leiatu, which the Colts took, was the first defensive player taken in this draft. That could have been the story. Instead, Chris Ballard managed to shove himself out there as the lead story on the Colts draft when he goes on this tirade about people questioning the character of Adonai Mitchell, which, by the way, is what everybody does on the NFL draft, is question everything, and certainly character. See Rashee Rice and what's going on down in Dallas here with the Kansas City Chiefs. What's the reaction to Ballard's little tantrum?
You know, the thing about Chris Ballard is that from the time he's gotten here, he's always been the smartest guy in the room. And I think that when you're 54-60-1 over the course of time as general manager with one playoff win, eventually you're going to have to start showing some results. So, quite frankly, and I don't mean it as like a shortened cop-out answer, but I think people have almost become, you know, deaf to a lot of the stuff of Ballard's defensiveness about things. Yes, it is true that Andrew Luck bailed on Chris Ballard. Not on Chris Ballard, but, you know, Andrew Luck retired early and that threw a curveball into the Colts' plans. Guess what? That was like 6 years ago. I mean, there are very few teams that are even playing with the same quarterback they had back then. Eventually, you've got to turn that around. They feel like they've got it now with Richardson. But each and every year, there's always a different thing where Ballard seemingly goes under a defensive tone. So I think that the media here and the fans themselves are kind of used to it. He did get a pass because of the Luck thing, but that has worn out with a lot of people. So, quite frankly, it's a big year for him. And by going a little outside the box with where they went in round one, it's going to have to work out for Chris Ballard, or else his seat, I think, goes from maybe for the first time feeling a little bit warm to very hot at the end of the year.
A friend of mine described Ballard as the best at getting the top talent at the positions that don't really matter, which,
listen,
you know, is...
I've said before, I don't mean to cut you off there, but this
no.
is perfect, because here's what I've said. If Chris Ballard was an NBA general manager today, he would have Dikembe Mutombo, Anthony Mason, and Sam Cassell as the first three players he got. It drives people crazy, right?
Yeah, right.
Honestly, the best players that he acquired in his first few drafts were a guard, a running back, and a linebacker.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we see where it's taking him.
So your friend is right.
And where do we go? Like, by the way, he lambastes everybody for, you know, questioning the character of Adonai Mitchell. And then Eric Ebron comes out and says, hey, Ballard trashed my name all over the league. Like, you know, where is that? Like, where is, I guess maybe, where is ownership on Ballard? Where are the players and the coaching staff on Ballard?
I think Jim Irsay likes Chris Ballard a great deal. And I think part of why Jim Irsay likes Chris Ballard a great deal is because, I mean, there are areas about Ballard that you have to respect. Don't get me wrong. But Jim Irsay is an owner who himself was once a general. There are not a lot of owners in the NFL that came up through the family business and at one time were a general manager. And quite frankly, were not a very good general manager. So I think that Jim Irsay has always coveted having a general manager that allows Jim Irsay to have a lot of power in terms of suggesting what decisions to be made. I think he took advantage of that with Ryan Grigson. I think he couldn't have that with Bill Polian for a number of factors. And then once he finally had some light that came through one of the chips, he got rid of Bill Polian, because I think even though they got along, he resented that in the beginning. So I think he likes Chris Ballard and has a great deal of respect for him, partially because Ballard does take input from Jim Irsay. I think the players respect Ballard. I think they like him. He is liked within the organization. I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he needs some media training and a little PR savviness. And the one thing I like about Chris Ballard is we're relatively the same age, and for a long time I wore baseball hats that had a flat brim. I for some reason, I convinced myself that it looked passable, and then I see it on Chris Ballard, and I realize that once you're over 50, it looks absurd. So I have to be grateful for him to know that if you look like you might be, I don't know if he's Botoxing, but he looks a little like Axl Rose with a mullet and a flat brim hat. I think it looks absurd. So I'm grateful for that he pointed that out, that you got to know when to know when. But I think he's good. I don't think he's great. I think he's hailed as being great, and I think people are finding out at this point that he is a good executive, but not necessarily yet a great one.
Jake Query, great stuff. We appreciate it. Thanks so much for the time, buddy. Have yourself a great week.
You too.
He was covering the Chiefs the day Patrick Mahomes was born. He was covering the Chiefs the day Mahomes brought the Lombardi Trophy back to Kansas City.
Kansas City has won their first Super Bowl in 50 years. 50 years of lifetime.
He's Adam Teicher of ESPN on the program.
Let's talk some Chiefs football. Adam Teicher has been covering the Chiefs since 1989. We talk about the Chiefs draft. Adam Teicher's appearance brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official health care provider of your Kansas City Royals. Get care from the experts of Royals Trust to make the right call. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/royals. Adam, how are you, sir?
Good, Saran. How are you doing today?
Doing very good. What do we think? We talked about Xavier Worthy on Friday. Folks, if they missed that, can go check out the podcast, 810WHB.com. So I don't want to spend too much time on him. I want to jump to the tackle and some of the comments today of Brett Veach. You know, he said, boy, yeah, it's a deep tackle draft, but not necessarily if you're picking at 32. Where do you think they had this kid on their board? I mean, I don't think they felt like he was a first-rounder. He said he was a consideration at 32. He was a consideration if they moved down. But do we really think that that was the case, or do we think that they got him right about where they thought he'd be?
Well, I think they got him where they wanted to get him, yeah. I mean, I don't think they would have taken him in the first round. So, no, I don't think so. But, you know, they may have considered moving up in the second round, which they did, just one spot. But they might have moved up a little more. You know, the Chiefs had some guys who they liked at the end of the second round, and as they were getting close to their pick, they were all there, and then they all started to go. You know, there was the corner from Missouri, Ennis Rakestraw. There was another offensive lineman, an offensive tackle, and then there was Kingsley, and the other two guys went, and the Chiefs said, well, we're going to be stuck in no man's land if we don't move up and get him. So that's what they did. That's why they felt like it was necessary to move up the one spot to get him. So, you know, that tells you that the Chiefs felt like they would have been in a place that was kind of no man's land for them if they didn't move up to get him.
They say he's going to compete at left tackle with Wanya Morris. It sounded like some of the other comments. We can close the door on Donovan Smith unless something goes drastically wrong.
Yeah, I think unless both those guys just show at some point that they can't handle the job, that, I do think it's over for Donovan Smith, unless there's an injury or, again, you know, both these guys are real disappointments and the Chiefs feel like they have to make a move.
All right. Who would you put as the front runner to win the left tackle job between he and Wanya Morris?
To start the season, I'll put Morris just because he's been here and has the experience, so I'll give him the edge right now.
Really?
Yeah.
The higher draft pick, not by a lot,
yep,
but by a round, is Sule Mataia. I mean,
yes, no, there's no doubt. And, you know, it may come to pass that way. But I'll take the leader in the clubhouse right now. But, hey, if this guy, when they get the pads on in camp, blows them away, they won't hesitate to do that. So I think he'll have to earn it. But I still think Morris will be the guy, at least to start the season.
Do you think Xavier Worthy is going to be a starter when the season opens?
Yeah, I do. Who else is it going to be? You know, is Rice going to be there?
Well, a healthy, the only thing holding Kadarius Toney back is health, I've been told.
Yeah, I mean, are you going to trust him? Are you going to trust Sky Moore? I mean, yes, I think so. I still think they're a little short at wide receiver. I would add a veteran just as a backup, you know, in just in case kind of guy. I'd feel better if they had another guy in here to help him out. And, hey, you can always cut him before the season starts if you don't need him. But I would bring a guy in. I think there's still maybe, particularly given Rice's situation, I think there may be somebody, a guy short.
What do you make of drafting two players for the interior offensive line?
Yeah, well, I mean, they're both guys they liked, and you know, we know they needed the depth this year, and they may need some one or two, possibly even three new starters next year in 2025. So you can't do all of that, or it's hard to do all that in 1 year. So they're getting a little bit of a start on that, and if worse comes to worse, they've just got some depth there. But they may have to press these guys into the lineup if there's an injury as soon as this year. And if not, then, maybe as starters in 2025.
I know Todd asked today about Creed Humphrey and his snaps. Brett Veach didn't really take the bait, didn't really comment on that. Do you think that this is spelling the end of Creed Humphrey at center, either as end of his time as a Chief here after one more year, or at least end of his time at center, maybe a move to guard?
Yeah, that's possible. I don't know. I mean, I think he's going to be the Chief center next year, if you're asking me, Creed Humphrey, but we'll see. The Chiefs want to see exactly what they have in these two guys, but particularly Nurzad, if he can play and he can handle the snapping part of it better than Creed Humphrey, maybe the Chiefs do make a move, although I don't see that.
Okay. All right. They take another corner. That's just kind of what they do. But they take a guy that's incredibly productive, looks the part. Is this just yet another guy that's capable of starting once Steve Spagnuolo and Dave Merritt get their hands on him?
Yeah, I would expect he'll be in the playing mix at some point, maybe not right away. But at some point, yeah. I mean, he's can run, and he's a big guy, and you know, is a what I call a full-service corner. He's not just a cover guy. He can play a complete game, and he'll mix it up in the running game and get physical. And that's, as we know, kind of a quality you have to play for Steve Spagnuolo at corner. So, yeah, I think he'll be in the mix at some point, no doubt.
How about the tight end? Do we believe that we'll talk about the contract extension for Travis Kelce here in a minute, but is Jared Wiley the heir apparent, or is he just what gives them the flexibility to be able to move on from Noah Gray?
Well, I don't know. I think the Chiefs will keep four.
I don't mean Noah Gray this year. I mean Noah Gray next year.
Yeah, that well could be the end of Noah Gray. I don't know that he'll be the starter for Kelce when Kelce's done, but who knows? I mean, get him in and take a look. I know the Chiefs think he's a well-rounded player. He's capable of being an every-down guy. He can block and catch. So I'm interested to see how the Chiefs use him this year and how much the multiple tight end stuff they do. You know, we know Andy Reid likes doing that, and they've got four guys they kind of like now. So kind of interesting to see how they use them all.
Yeah, what do we make of the contract extension? It's kind of a rite of passage this time of year. They throw a year on, throw some cash his way, keep him happy, keep Patrick Mahomes happy. Is this just the latest, or is this one a little bit bigger?
Yeah, this is a little bit bigger. He's the highest paid tight end for the next couple of years, at least as of now, which he's never been before. So this is something that's a little new. And this will probably be the last contract, I would think, for Travis Kelce. I mean, he's going to be, 36 when this runs out. So I think this is probably going to be it for him. But, hey, who knows? Maybe the Chiefs give him another contract after that.
Yeah, let's take a break. One more with Adam Teicher. We're talking about the Chiefs draft, the contract extension handed down. We'll also get into the stadium with Adam Teicher covering the Chiefs for ESPN.com. Adam Teicher's appearance with us here on the program brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official health care provider of the Royals, the Chiefs, and the Kansas City Current. The University of Kansas Health System recognizes the unique challenges that female athletes face. That's why they created the region's only female athlete program, helping student athletes, weekend warriors, reach their full athletic potential. Learn more right now at kansashealthsystem.com/female athlete.
All right, the good sense. End of the hour answer. Before Kingsley Suamataia, who was the last BYU player drafted by the Chiefs?
Wow. Drafted.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? The safety was from BYU, but he wasn't drafted.
Hmm. I can't think of the name.
Come on,
Sorensen.
Daniel Sorensen.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
drafted BYU player. John Tate. Is there somebody in between Tate and here?
Nope.
John Tate
in the first round in 1999. The only other player the Chiefs have ever drafted out of BYU was a center named Orrin Oldeson in 1976.
John Tate famously keeping his helmet too loose.
That's right. John Tate to keep his helmet off. Wouldn't be talking about it right now. Isn't that right, Teicher?
Yeah, John Tate needs to buckle that chin strap for sure.
Damn it, going out there and trying to cause problems for Eddie Freeman. What the hell was he thinking?
And you can print it, Teicher.
Yeah.
Those were the days back at training camp, man.
Yeah, good times, good times. Adam Teicher's with us. We just gave away Good Sense. GoodSenseSubs.com. Got graduation parties coming up. Let Good Sense cater for you. They do a phenomenal job. And if you take the code WHBG5, you can save $5 on those party trays, whether it's the freshly sliced subs, the fresh baked cookie trays, family sized pastas, gourmet meatball slider kits. Good Sense makes catering easy. Get $5 off any large catering tray or family sized pasta with the code WHBG5 at GoodSense.com or on the GoodSense app. What do we make here real quick of the, I don't want to run out of time on this, of the comments of Clark Hunt? What do you take them to mean?
Well, you know, the Chiefs are starting from scratch, basically. They're going to go it alone and try to figure out something without being tied to the Royals. And I think that's probably a good idea. And I still suspect that they're going to be at Arrowhead when all is said and done, in a renovated Arrowhead. But I don't know. I don't feel as strongly about that as I did before this last vote.
Why? Why do you think that they'll still be there? What?
Well, they just have a real affinity for that stadium. I mean, it was such an iconic place and kind of still is for a long time. And there's some things that they can get in that stadium that they can't get in a new stadium. The way that the seating area is designed, they can't do that anymore for, you know, all the rules they have now. They can't recreate that kind of thing where you've got basically 80,000 people, 75,000 people sitting right on top of the action. It has to be designed different. So the noise would be different and all that. So I suspect the Chiefs will try at least again to renovate Arrowhead, but, you know, hey, they may come to a different conclusion this time.
I don't know why anybody in the government would be on board with that. Why would you dump a bunch of money in to generate no new revenue?
Yeah, well, that may be the way this goes. I don't know, but I think my sense is right now that that's what the Chiefs would try to do.
The Royals have had an expedited timeline. They wanted to get this done sooner. Do you think the Chiefs take their time?
I would think by, say, by Christmas of next year, I think the Chiefs just kind of have to do something here. I think they're on an expedited timeline too. I think you know that lease is coming up pretty quickly now. So the end of those leases. So I think by Christmas of next year, we'll know a lot more about the Chiefs and their plans and which way they're headed with this.
Christmas of next year is 24 or 25?
25. So about a year and a half.
That would be taking their time, in my opinion. Because I think the Royals have got to turn something around quicker.
Yeah, well, they've said they want a new place, before the lease runs out. The Chiefs
three years
don't.
Before the lease. They want it by 28.
You know, the Chiefs wouldn't, even if this last referendum had passed, the Chiefs weren't going to start work on the new Arrowhead until after the World Cup was here. So it was going to be a while till they get a new stadium. So they're not on quite as tight of a timeline as maybe the Royals are.
All right, back to the football side of things. What is the biggest need that the Chiefs have now? If they're to do something on the secondary market, a free agency, what are they looking for?
I still think it's running back. I don't know that they have a complete running back depth chart. In other words, all the guys who are going to be on their opening day roster, I don't know if they're there right now. You know, they didn't draft one. I know they wanted to, but never found what they consider to be good value in a guy where they were picking, so they didn't do it. And, you know, I know they signed a couple guys, undrafted guys. But so I'm wondering about a running back, and I think that maybe, to me, looks like the most likely place for them to sign somebody if they do bring in a veteran before camp starts.
What about D-line?
Yeah, that's another spot that they could bring in a guy. I think that's a really good spot. They wanted to draft a defensive lineman, too, and ran into much the same problem. So, I think D-line's another spot. As I said earlier, I think they could use another receiver. Whether they do it or not, I don't know.
Yeah, that's to me. You know, those are I kind of thought that maybe they'd go two wideouts in this draft, but only having the seven picks, I understand why they didn't. You knew there were going to be something, but D-line, they got one wideout. They didn't really address defensive line. You know, that to me are the spots, but a veteran wide receiver, unless they really do buy what they're selling on the receivers they got, which maybe I'm the only one, but I ain't buying it. So
still seems kind of thin.
Yeah. And I think the longer, you know, some of the wideouts sit out there, the more I think a one-year incentive-laden deal on a team, you know, barreling towards another Super Bowl would be a pretty attractive landing spot. Like, if you're Boyd and you're not getting what you want, isn't this about as good a spot as you can land in?
Yeah, I would. I'd want to play here. You know, I'd want to play for with Mahomes and for Andy Reid and all they got going. Absolutely. And hey, you know, there might be somebody who gets cut from another team who the Chiefs show an interest in at some point. But yeah, and you know, you've heard him talk about. You've heard Brett Veach talk about Hollywood Brown. I mean, he's already talking about him as a 1 year player here. You know, he thinks he's going to play so well the Chiefs won't be able to afford him next year. So you know, so who do you have for next? Next year, for beyond next year, well, you've got Xavier Worthy and you got Rashee Rice, and so they're going to have to get back at this again next year. And you know, wouldn't be a bad thing to get started on that now.
Last question: what's your reaction to Chris Ballard's little temper tantrum?
Oh, the one about
A.D. Mitchell?
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. You know, I kind of like that. I mean, I think people need to put names to those kinds of things, you know, that if the guys, you know, it's one thing to report news anonymously. It's another to report character things about somebody anonymously. And you try to be pretty careful about that. And, you know, we all hear a lot of different things, but unless somebody wants to attach a name to it, I'm kind of with him. I kind of like what he had to say there.
Adam, you're the man. We appreciate the time as always. Great work here on the draft, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right, good stuff, Seren. Talk to you next time.
All right, there he is, Adam Teicher from ESPN, covering the Chiefs since 1989. We'll talk to Adam again soon. Let's take a break. We come back. We'll get you the things you need to know. We'll hear from some Brett Veach. I hear a little Clark Hunt. Also get you a little David Leskey talking Royals. That's coming up next hour.
All right, before Hunter Norzad, who was the last player the Chiefs drafted from Penn State? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.